Support comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign. This winter, Strategic Farm Marketing is holding risk management seminars near you. A complete list of meeting dates and locations can be found at sfarmmarketing.com.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
This is the January 12 edition of Commodity Week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Arlen Suderman. He's from FC Stone out of Kansas City, Missouri. Kurt Kimmel with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Matt Bennett at Bennett Consulting in Windsor, Illinois. And Mike Zuzolo at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Atchison, Kansas. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Do find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.
Let's start with our list of items to discuss. I know that the USDA numbers will be on them, but what other things have been on your mind this week? We'll start with you, Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting.
Well, you know, I think after seeing the USDA numbers, I think maybe it would be interesting for us all to discuss, what we see the acreage situation being coming up. I've had several meetings I've done this week in the state of Iowa, and I might have been a little bit surprised by some of the things that I've heard producers say to me, so I'd be interested in hearing what everyone else has to say about our 17 acres coming up.
Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities.
Yeah, I agree with Matt. That'd be the next topic here is the acreage mix, and also South America, of course, between now and March 31st, but we'll see how the news comes out of the Southern Hemisphere, if it's going to result in some reduction in Argentine's bean production or not.
Mike Zuzolo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting.
Yeah, other than what the other two guys said, Todd, I think maybe the outside markets, given that we've seen a more inflationary trade develop here since our last commodity week together, and whether that's got some sticking power and whether that's going to play a role in the markets here as we come back from the three-day weekend.
And finally, Arlen Suderman from FC Stone.
I certainly agree with all those factors, and I'd take the last comment just a little bit further and take a look at the longer-term effect if we continue to see the trend toward a stronger dollar, as we've seen a couple other times in history, and what impact that might have, regardless of the fundamentals, on the commodity sector.
Well, let's go through some of the numbers from USDA, and we'll get our discussion started in just a moment. Here's how the figures came in from Washington, D.C., on the 12th day of January. The final crop production report of the year showed a drop in both the corn and the soybean yield. Production for corn now set at 15,148,000,000. That's down 78 million from December, on a yield which is 0.7 of a bushel lower at 174.6, down from 175.3. Ending stocks for corn at 2.355 billion. 48 million lower than they were last month, and USDA says that'll give us an average year marketing price, cash sales, at $3.40, and that runs, of course, from fall to fall. For soybeans, they tagged total production in the United States at 4.307 million bushels. It's down 54 million bushels from last month. The yield also lower for the soybeans, went from 52.5 to 52.1. Ending stocks are down 60 million bushels at 420 million bushels. The average cash price at $9.50. The average cash price for wheat at $3.80, by the way. World-ending stocks were down 1.27 million metric tons for corn and down 0.53 million metric tons for soybeans. Wheat up 0.15 million metric tons. So an increase there. So let's get started with some of those numbers. Matt Bennett, did you get surprised by any of the numbers that came out from USDA, in particular for the soybeans?
You know, I guess upon initial observation, I was a little bit surprised You know, I didn't disagree necessarily with exports not moving. I think a lot of people figured that they might get ratcheted up a little more. You know, I think that a couple of things stood out to me. You know, we were all expecting a little bit of a revision downward as far as the carryout goes from 480 down to maybe that 468. I think it was the average straight guess when you go clear to 420. It was kind of interesting to me, and it's very well possible we could see some sort of a downward revision. But the USDA had been fairly aggressive earlier on, in my opinion, on the demand forecast. And you know, I don't know that we're going to be able to cut into it like we have in the previous years. But yeah, I guess I would say I was a little bit interested to see production get cut somewhat as well, based upon conversations I've had with producers throughout the Corn Belt, but it wasn't a huge amount. But I definitely think that caught some people by surprise.
So, Arlen Suderman, when you take a look at some of these numbers and you think about the usage that we've had in the soybean side of the ledger, it's now sitting at 420 million. Most producers are thinking, hey, we're on our way down again, just as we have in the past. Should they count on it?
Well, I look at history when I assess that, and I look at a seasonal pattern of what percent have actually been sold versus the seasonal pattern and what have been actually shipped versus a seasonal pattern. And we've only had one other year in recent memory, and that was just 2 years ago, that we had a higher percent sold of the USDA's target sold at this point and shipped, and then we saw a collapse of the export demand late. So other than that 1 year we had 2 years ago, history would argue that we probably do need to see the export target raise a little bit more. Right now, we're about 160 million bushels above the seasonal pace. I think that an argument of 40 to 50 million bushels can easily be made at this point.
Mike Suzalo, I'd like to talk a little bit about the grain stocks number for soybeans in particular. When you look at the on and off farm stocks, they're at 1.335 million on farm for soybeans, 1.56 million. Our billion, rather, for off-farm total as of December 1st at 2.89. That would have been for the report today. Does this give you any indication of how much really has been sold? And I know Arlen has given us some indication from his point of view, but what is your opinion?
Yeah, I mean, I think that was where the cash flow was generated this fall for producers, Todd. I think they wanted to sell beans and store the corn with the idea that we would see a post-harvest rally in the corn or some kind of short covering rally, just because from the standpoint of where the managed money positions were on the commitment of traders, they were so long in the up to, you know, 1 to 2 year highs net long in soybeans futures and options, whereas they were carrying near record lows in corn and wheat managed money positions. I will say one thing about the exports to pick up with what Arlen was talking about. I've noticed that we've had 3 weeks in a row now in the export sales where we've seen net reductions. This week happened to be on Friday because of the holiday, but we had another 17 million bushels of net reductions, and we had our first week of net reductions on meal. And I think one of the big differences between corn and beans right now is we are neck and neck with the same price with Brazil and soybeans at the Gulf versus their Gulf prices, whereas with corn, we are very, very far discounted with the Brazilians and the Argentines, for that matter, when it comes to corn. So I think while the trade has been, and as the other two guys have talked about, have been very vigilant and cognizant and priced in very readily the demand side for the soybeans, they have not in the corn. And I think they've kind of shrugged off this weakening in the export sales. And quite frankly, it troubles me, given that the major exporters have about 5% more production as of today's report, with Brazil going up to 104 million tons versus what they had last marketing year.
Kirk Kimmel, I want to come to you now. I've been driving towards the acreage mix, which you mentioned, and mostly because producers have made note, at least if they've been listening to some of the things that have been coming out of the University of Illinois, and probably when they've been reading their own financial statements, that they've been making more money on soybeans than they have corn over the last several years. They sold soybeans last fall because they were thinking, hey, I've got a better price and I can make money on it. Can we expect the acreage mix to reflect soybean acres going up this March?
Yeah, we feel there's the momentum's there, whether it's 2 million acres or 5 million acres, we're going to find out. But you know, when you talk to guys throughout, you know, they're pretty serious on it. Part of it, too, is due to crop rotation. The show, farm shows and meetings we've been at, is not just, you know, corn-bean ratio or yields or return on production. It's just mainly, too, of just how the crop rotation is going to work out this coming crop year. But definitely after today's reaction with beans up almost 30 and corn flatlined, that's going to keep that thought process strong. And it's going to come down to the spring weather, of course, see what our weather pattern is as we get more into the growing season.
Matt Bennett, you told us you've been traveling through Iowa and been talking to producers about their acreage decisions for this coming year. You've heard some surprising things?
Yeah, you know, it was interesting to me to talk not only to producers, but to some of the guys that are selling seed. And I've been several places so far in the last 6-8 weeks. This is probably the first place. A couple of regions I was in, northeastern Iowa, and folks told me that they didn't see a whole lot of corn acres switching over to beans, if any. I know there's a couple of places that I spoke at, there was ethanol plants within 5 of them within an hour of these guys. So, you know, I think that obviously the basis is affected, you know, and there's a fair amount of livestock within arm's reach. So to me, I think it was a little bit of a surprise. Then on the other hand, there were a couple of regions that I was in this week, did seven different areas in Iowa. And I'd say about half of the guys that I talked to felt like soybean acres were going to go up in relation to corn acres. But, you know, as far as the other states that I've been in, I think percentage-wise, it's the least that I've seen. So I would expect Iowa maybe not to have near as large of a switch maybe as some of the other states that I've talked in so far.
So, Arlen Suderman, I want to follow up with you on this whole acreage thought. From FC Stone's point of view, have you been able to gather much information about what producers plan to do this spring?
We surveyed our clients in December on what their producers in their area, our clients, of course, being the commercials and what they see. I don't know how much confidence to put in it. I'd like to have, a little bit better sampling distribution to have confidence in this number. But I was surprised at the breadth of the shift. Overall, looking for about a 5 million acre reduction in corn, so that would take us below 90 million acres. And on soybeans, it was actually looking for an 8.7% increase, so that would take us up over 90 million acres of soybeans. I'm hesitant to say that the shift is going to be that significant. But based on what I've done as far as talking to people around the country, and we've gone state by state looking at the crop budgets and looking at the dynamics going into it, I do think the shift is probably going to be a little bit more than a lot of people think. Overall, I would agree with the comment made previously, I think it was by Matt, that maybe it won't be so much in Iowa, but I think it'll be in a lot of the states, particularly some of the peripheral states where we'll see a lot more of a shift in acreage. And I'm going with 89.5 right now for corn and going with 89 million for soybeans.
Have any of the rest of you, and I'm thinking maybe Mike Zuzlo or Kurt, come up with a set of numbers that you're thinking about for acreage at this point? Mike, do you have a set?
Yeah, I'm right with Arlen. Probably 500,000 difference on each of them, 89.5 on corn, and I could see it stretching to 90. And the same with the beans. I think one thing just to add to the conversation is what I've experienced pretty severely, and it's probably the greatest since I've been, you know, obviously with Freedom to Farm, that was right when I started doing this brokerage. And I think the lender pressure is probably the greatest it's been since Freedom to Farm started, in my opinion, Todd. And I think it's a lender pressure to go towards beans. And on the other side of that is the new crop basis corn for October right now in Atchison on the Missouri River is 32 under. And then for beans, it's 72 under. So you got to get the bean rally a little bit more to get these guys to switch. But I have very strong sense that what Arlen talked about and Matt's talking about is very, very appropriate, especially as you get west of the Mississippi and you get out of big corn country, Dakotas and even peripheral states, like Missouri, which is a big bean state anyway. They're really looking hard at beans, and it just adds, in my opinion, to the idea. If you get this next move up, this is a very good second chance to, if you're going after higher bean acres, to get that hedge in place, because then you take some pressure potentially off the corn, especially with the super low, you know, 100 plus year low on winter wheat acres, you know, maybe giving the corn some daylight and some breathing room here.
Tell me a little bit about those winter wheat acres and what that really means to you, Mike.
Well, you know, it was a low since 1909. It's 10% lower than last year on winter wheat. Production probably could be 20% lower on winter wheat if we don't improve the crop conditions. And so that puts all wheat probably down 10 to 15%, Todd. That gets you just below a billion bushel carryover, closer to 15, 16 levels. And that's enough daylight, I think, for the corn to be able to keep itself as a feed grain. I will say also, this ice storm that's coming in through the hard red wheat belt and into a lot of the soft red wheat belt that is in the drought monitor right now, it had better perform, because I think we took a lot of premium out banking on 2 to 3 inches of liquid precipitation. And if this ice storm comes through and it does not give us what they say, I think the trade could come back after the holiday and really shoot that hard red wheat up, especially in light of today's report numbers.
So, Kirk Kimmel, we've been talking about a lot of changes in acreage mix, wheat lower, thinking going forward that there will be more soybean acres. How does this make you consider marketing plans for producers and what they should be doing in the coming weeks and months?
Well, it's, you know, quite concerned price-wise, I know. Or heard that one advisor talking about beans, you know, for six in front of us. So, you know, with larger acre potential and good growing season this coming crop year, the risk is we'll have a you know, bigger supply to eat through. So as a producer, downside risk is, you know, a main concern as we go through this winter. We've been looking at more called crash protection. Because if reality comes true here and we see these bigger supply to work with, that there's, you know, considerable downside risk mainly going into this fall next winter. So with low option volatility, there's some creative strategies out there where you could get so-called downside crash protection, whereas if beans do break, you know, $1 to $2, you know, there's potentially a way to ease the pain here if you don't get the cash beans sold higher here this winter or early summer.
Oh, let's pile on the bearish sentiment and talk about a stronger dollar trend. Arlen Suderman, that was on your list. Is that what you think is going to happen?
I do think that we're probably looking at greater risk of a strong dollar. And as I look back at history of other times when we looked at similar dynamics, and it's not like you have a large pool to pull from, but I do think that there is risk of us seeing a significant amount of additional strength in the dollar. And I look at other periods of time when we had that, and that those were times when we struggled on the export markets, and correspondingly weak currencies overseas encouraged production at a time when we had surpluses here. And so I think it's a real concern we need to keep in mind, particularly if the funds decide they don't want to own the commodities. Strength in crude oil has kind of kept them engaged in the commodity sector as a whole. How long that'll be able to hold on, I don't know. It depends on OPEC cheating on the agreement, whether it happens, to what extent it happens, shale oil production ramping up, et cetera. But it is a real concern I think we need to make sure that producers are aware of, is that risk if we go through an extended time of a stronger dollar, and make sure they have their expectations a little bit more realistic on what's the price to take.
So, Matt Bennett, you've been traveling, and I'm wanting to know, given what we've heard so far, it seems to me that in the countryside, and according to Purdue University's latest barometer released this week, the producers are feeling much better about the position they're in at this point than they were even just last fall, though it doesn't sound like it should feel that way at this point, given what you guys are all telling me today on the radio.
Well, you know, the way I look at it is, essentially, you've got corn prices pretty much the same as what we were at a year ago. Pretty darn similar. I mean, these corn is pretty close to what your spring insurance price was. Yet, you know, we've got fertilizer costs per acre down anywhere from $30 to $65 an acre, depending on your N, P, and K program. So profitability, as far as corn is concerned, you're starting out in a significantly better situation than what you did last year. You know, if you look at it from a profit margin standpoint, you look at soybeans, and obviously you're well over a dollar above where we were at last year. And so, you know, your profit margins going into the year, I mean, you cannot be frustrated and upset if you're going to be completely objective about it, looking at it compared to last year. And so, you know, I've been telling producers it's a good situation you're in, but we don't want to take too much for granted. We need to understand that not every 2 years is the same. And so if there's a lot of money on the table for you on soybeans, probably more so than corn, we need to be cognizant of that and be willing to, if we're going to make decisions based upon the price of soybeans, by all means, we better be doing something with them.
Yeah, but Matt, it's really hard for producers to think about making cash sales, of course. Sometimes they're not very good or thoughtful as it relates to using the marketplace that's available to them. What should they do to protect the downside risk in the soybean market?
You know, that's an interesting question. I had a guy ask me not too long ago when beans were trading around 10-20 basis to know. He wanted to know about buying some $10 November bean puts. And I said, with your basis locally, you could sell beans at $9.90 to the elevator across the scale next fall. Or if you want, I guess we can spend 50 cents on a put option and protect $10 minus the 50 gives you $9.50 minus the basis next year gives you maybe $9.20. What makes more sense to you? And so, you know, the thing that I encourage them to do is sit down. If $9.90 is what you can get at the elevator, plug it into a profitability spreadsheet. See how much money you're making per acre, you know, at a somewhat conservative yield, let alone the yields we've seen the last 2 years. And you're looking at some awfully salty incomes.
Yeah, but I'm not really sure how much I'm going to raise, and I'm a little scared about that prospect. How far should I go in the hole on that one?
Well, I mean, my personal opinion, if I'm buying crop insurance and I've got insured bushels, then personally, I have no problem with getting, you know, maybe even up to half sold on my APH if, capital letters if, I know that it's a very profitable situation, which 99% of the budgets that I've looked at for soybeans are profitable at 10 and above no beans. And then second of all, if you want to protect more than that, yeah, you get creative, like Kurt was saying, with an option strategy. You know, there's a whole lot of things you can do other than simply buying a straight put. If you want to put a hedge windmill in place, if you want to do a barefoot strategy. But bottom line is, let's protect as much of this value on this bean market as what we can, and then hope that, you know, the market goes ahead and rallies. Big deal. You know, maybe we can participate in that market as well. We just have to stay flexible.
So, Mike Zuzlo, are you comfortable in using crop insurance in the way that was just discussed with Matt Bennett?
I am, with a combination of the puts, and I am with a combination of leaving basis open on some of the cash sales that you forward contract or that you look ahead to. A hedge to arrive leaves your basis open. I think the basis is oftentimes a very good relief valve to a localized crop problem that maybe the Chicago Board of Trade won't pick up on, Todd. And it's a good relief valve if you have a nationwide problem and the rest of the country is pulling corn or beans out of your area because you had a good crop. So I think a combination, and I think that's what the other guys are talking about as well, is a really smart thing to do at this point. I would say that the biggest issue that I see in 2017 is that we will get probably a move up, and the idea will be, let's lift hedges with the idea that we don't need the hedges anymore because we're turning in the cycles. And I felt this way in 2016, and it preserved a lot of people's equity, and I'm sure it did for the other fellows on the panel because I know them and they do a very good job. But I feel like 2017 is just as important, if not more important than 2016. When I saw the Iowa Farmer Today article a few weeks back about the per capita young farmer suicide rate being worse than it was at the peak of 1982, it made me feel even more strongly about that. I do not think we need to get into a drought-busting, rip-roaring bull mindset in 2017. If we have a 2012 drought, we'll have a couple years to enjoy that with better prices and get prices well above cost of production.
Arlen, we've discussed soybeans an awful lot. What about corn and trying to market it, both old and new crop, because there's a lot of it around at this point and will likely continue to be in 2017?
Yeah, I'd like to feed off the comments just made. I think they're very good, and it's all on perspective. And I think we're close enough to the commodity boom that we had that there's too many people hoping that we can get back up to $6 corn or $7 corn. And is that possible? Yes, it's certainly possible. But those types of commodity booms come every 30 to 35 years in the cycle, so we need to have more realistic expectations. And I think the farmers are doing a much better job of that. Here again, similar to the soybean comments, measuring the alternatives that are available. Is your local basis at a historically weak level or historically strong level? That gives you some indication of which to do in your local region as far as your mix. But I do think you need to take a business approach, be locking in opportunities to maintain the equity you built over the last 10 years in your farm and not let it slip. You'll sleep much better at night when you've got that equity built in and locked in, and take some of the unknowns out of it.
Kurt Kimmel, I'd be amiss if I didn't let you answer that same question on corn.
Hey, corn chart just virtually sideways since clear back last July. It's got a coiling feature going. Obviously, there's a lot of cash corn to move out there. Guys sold beans and had the tendency to hang on to some cash corn. But when you look at the players and what they're doing and what's been involved, there's been a big push, buy beans, sell corn, buy beans, sell wheat in the spread. And at some point in time and through here, we feel there'll be some unwinding of that spread. They'll sell the beans and buy back some short corn, some short wheat positions over time. And I don't know if it'll be this spring or the fact or reality of we'll have less corn acres to spark that movement. But if corn, March corn can go ahead and close above this resistance level in this 365 area, then that sets the stage here to give some buyers to come in and give some opportunity to try to get out from underneath some of this corn in through here. But overall, we still got a lot to eat through in through here, and that's going to be the challenge here this winter. But it's going to have to be, short corn acres to give the trade encouragement to push it higher.
I think it's time for our final word, and I'll stay with you, Kurt Kimmel, for just a moment. Your thoughts as we finish up this edition of Commodity Week for the 12th day of January, USDA Report Day.
Got the numbers out of the way. Now the key is, the Southern Hemisphere, and see if these demand weekly export sales continue to remain strong. But there's a lot of market in front of us, and with the momentum to the upside here, particularly in beans, so we can't, spend enough time maybe looking at having some downside protection here, putting some price floors in place to give you that confidence to go through the growing season.
Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting.
Well, Todd, we talked about the USDA report needing to be the catalyst to shift the beans up and get us above $10 again and towards $11 in new crop November. We got that 12.5% cut in U.S. ending stocks. We got a 3% cut in world meal ending stocks. And so we do have the technical potential, I think, to get back up towards 1050, 1060 in lead month futures. And at that point, I'll want to be starting to look at adding two hedges for 2017 and realizing, like what Kurt said, when we come back from the three-day weekend, I think beans of all the three commodities we've talked about need the weather to be on their side the most when it comes to South America when that holiday trade comes back.
Yeah, just as a reminder, Martin Luther King Jr. Day is on Monday, and the trade is closed. The next time trade will happen will, for next week, begin on Monday evening, and then that will be the Tuesday session. Arlen Suderman of FC Stone, your final thoughts.
Global demand is solid for corn and for soybeans. That's not an issue. It's just that the weather has been so favorable that supply has kept up with it. So we are vulnerable if it does hiccup along the way. The decrease in corn acres and wheat acres does give us a little bit more opportunity there. But I'm bullish agriculture going forward. It's just not going to be handed to us. We need to have the plan in place and be prepared to take it. The market almost always gives us that opportunity at some point. Let's be prepared to take it when it comes.
And Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting, Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois.
You know, I agree with what everybody's saying. I think that as we go into this year, we gotta understand, as some of these guys are saying, there is a significant amount of downside risk. The bottom line is we could all make pretty good money for the most part with protecting value of some sort in this soybean situation. And a lot of producers can also protect value, look for opportunities, Arlen was saying, whenever it comes to corn. So as a couple of the guys said, we have to have a plan. You got to try to remove the emotion of this marketing out of it as much as you possibly can by making it a business-based decision. And if you do so, I think you're going to make your life just a little bit easier. And, you know, let's go for base hits instead of home runs and live to farm another year.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find our programs online on demand to listen to anytime you'd like at willag.org. That's willag.org, our website. Or if you're an Apple user, look in iTunes. If you use Android, we're in the Play Store. If you like Stitcher, we're there too. NPR One, you bet. And even in SoundCloud. Commodity Week, it's our look at commodity agriculture. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Our thanks to our panelists this week, including Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting out of Windsor, Illinois, Kurt Kimmel from Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois, Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas, and our special guest, Arlen Suderman of FC Stone out of Kansas City, Missouri.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.